This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, June 4th, 2012. I'm Caleb Brown. Say what you will about President Obama, but he sure does seem to order the killing of a whole lot of people without due process, many of whom we can't identify, some of whom are American citizens, in countries we're not officially fighting. The picture now emerging about how the executive branch unilaterally chooses its drone strike targets is a deeply troubling one. So says Julian Sanchez, a research fellow at the Cato Institute. This is from AFP. U.S. missiles killed 15 militants in Pakistan's Taliban and al-Qaeda stronghold of North Waziristan on Monday, the third drone strike in 3 days and the deadliest this year. 8 drone strikes have been reported in Pakistan since May 23rd, the same number as in the previous 4 months, and Monday's was the deadliest since 18 Pakistani Taliban were reported killed on November 16th, 2011. A security official said 15 militants were killed in a dawn strike in a compound. The bodies of those killed were unable to be identified. The president of the United States has decided that it is ultimately his call, which I believe is supposed to be of some comfort, that he is making these decisions himself and not anyone else is being charged with making these decisions for him. But at the same time, you have the president deciding to kill people in other countries, some of which are American citizens, without any form of due process whatsoever.
Yeah, the extraordinary has become routine, and it is hard to imagine a starker illustration of the contrast between the rule of law and the rule of men than the now weekly Tuesday kill meetings held with the president and apparently now his political advisor, David Axelrod, and top counterterrorism advisor John Brennan, to look over PowerPoint slides and decide who is to be a target. And you know, even people like former liberal Yale law professor Harold Coe say that what should be reassuring here is that John Brennan is a man of great moral rectitude. That should be really chilling. Maybe that's true, but a core principle of liberal democracy is that we don't count on the personal qualities, the moral authority of individuals to decide questions of life and death like this.
If for no other reason, power changes hands.
If for no other reason. And no one is infallible. We need to trust in institutions and not the moral rectitude of individuals. There's a really disturbing scene painted in a recent New York Times investigative story about these kill meetings. Describes the president looking at mugshots of 15 al-Qaeda suspects, word is important, in Yemen. It says several were Americans, 2 were teenagers, including a girl who looked even younger than their 17 years. And according to people who were present, the president remarked, "How old are these people? If they're starting to use children, we're moving into a whole different phase." It seems to me that what moves one into a whole different phase is not when terrorists are callous about who they use as instruments of death or who they put at risk, but when it becomes routine and normal for the executive in a liberal democracy to effectively take personal responsibility for deciding not in some extraordinary situation. We still talk about Anwar al-Awlaki as the face of targeted killing, but as a routine matter, this kind of decision based on personal authority of which suspects are so dangerous and so infeasible to capture that they need to be taken out with collateral damage, inevitably. The numbers, again, the New York Times reporters are kept down by a version of juking the stats. So again, 15 people died. You think one of them was the target. You assume the others had to be militants, even if you don't know who they are or what country they came from.
And that's pretty much explicit in a lot of the calculations that the administration is making. That is, if you are of a certain age and you are a male, you are presumed to be a militant unless proven otherwise posthumously through some research.
The New York Times actually reported that it was a joke going around the State Department that the CIA now would see 3 guys doing jumping jacks and assume it had to be a terrorist training camp. That is a joke of a more obscene character than I can find it in myself to laugh at. But that kind of gallows humor, I suppose, comes with the territory when you begin undertaking endeavors like this. I think maybe the most or one of many astonishing things about this is that in this important New York Times piece, we have dozens of current and former presidential advisors speaking, obviously with presidential approval. There's no way that many people go on the record without an okay from the White House. And yet many of them are quoted anonymously because of the technically this is something that remains classified. And of course the legal opinion justifying this targeted killing program, and this is again, remember, you know, targeted killing in countries we are not at war with, far from any battlefield, essentially on the implicit authority and authorization of the authorization for the use of military force, first passed 10 years ago. But you know, we should do a double take there. If this is really a classified program that it is injurious to national security to have discussed, then how is it that this selective discussion, when the White House thinks it's politically convenient, thinks it will help put this in a better light, that's all right. And yet even the legal justification for this program, that remains classified, but really classified, meaning we can't actually see it. This is, I think, a real cynical abuse of the idea of classification. Things are supposed to be secret from the American public when it would seriously imperil national security to have them discussed. It's not a discretionary tag to be applied and then removed at the will of the president on the basis of political convenience.
We should assume that killing a U.S. citizen carries the highest standard for whatever justification we could come up with. But Attorney General Eric Holder basically has released an incomplete list of potential justifications for these kind of killings. So we assume that other people that we might have executed by the president around the world, that carries something lower standard than what Eric Holder's already outlined.
Yeah, well, and of course the truth is we don't know. One imagines that they have put forth the most reasonable sounding list of qualifications, but it becomes clear again from the reporting that the standards are not nearly as high as one might expect. That joke about the three guys doing jumping jacks reflects, I think, a certain amount of internal queasiness about the laxity of standards on, in particular, what were known as signature strikes. That is to say, there isn't necessarily a known identified nameable target, but there are suspicious buildings or facilities in an area controlled by militants that meet certain abstract criteria. And so whenever you've checked off enough boxes, even if you don't know specifically who's there, it meets the general criteria for a terrorist training camp or other facility. And so that becomes a target. It does seem clear that there's a lot of internal concern about this, and that should be a warning sign. It should also be a warning sign that we know the very first attack under the Obama administration of this kind killed its target, also killed two neighboring families, and then left a trail of unexploded ordnance that in the subsequent days killed a number of other innocent people. Now, supposedly these meetings were initiated in an attempt to tighten up those standards, but you have to ask, are we creating more militants than we are taking out? When you look at some of the most recent foiled terror plots not plotted by the FBI, it's the rationale is not America is free and so we hate America, or we want to establish a global caliphate. It's, I'm outraged at what I'm seeing in Waziristan and in Afghanistan. I'm outraged by these reports of the bodies of children and innocent families. you know, the threat we are creating may well be closer and more dire than the threat we're removing. You know, it doesn't really make sense to blow up one suspected terrorist and, you know, maybe a family as collateral somewhere in Yemen if the result is to create a dozen angry men in Boston or Maine or, you know, Louisiana who are on our shores and ready to move against the United States because of what they're seeing.
Julian Sanchez is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. You can read more about national security, targeted killings, and executive power at our website, cato.org.